This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Hello. In this month's JodBite, I'm with Dr. Brian Rees. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
Could you tell us a bit more about yourself and your background and what ties you to Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics?
I've recently done a PhD at Jodrell Bank studying planetary nebulae.
Okay.
I have just completed a paper and I am working on a second paper on planetary nebulae.
Great. So I'm not sure many of our listeners will know what planetary nebulae are, actually. So could you maybe run us by the basics of what these objects are and how they form?
When a star of about 1 to 8 solar masses basically goes into the red giant phase, it then consumes its helium.
Okay.
Core. Helium and hydrogen are then fused in shells around the core. The star's envelope begins to be expelled by radiation pressure and by thermal shocks.
Okay.
And the ejector basically is eventually ionized as the core shrinks, the temperature of the star rises.
Sure.
And therefore we actually get a display of mainly ionized material. But there are other things in the nebula besides ionized material. There is also molecular and non-illuminated items and dust.
Okay, so we're looking at a sort of star in the later stages of its life that starts to essentially throw off most of its envelope into the surrounding space.
Yes.
I see. And actually, these make for very pretty pictures, don't they? You sort of get these wisps of ionized material and gas coming
it's
out. Of the
star. It's rather more than wisps, but...
Absolutely. And so you mentioned you've just published a paper about planetary nebulae. So what was the gist of that?
Well, basically, Weidman and Dyers produced a paper. They suggested that towards the galactic bulge, nebulae that had a noticeable difference between their length and width appeared to show a preponderance of an angle towards about 100 degrees from north. We were looking at nebulae in the galactic bulge, and we thought we would see if we could find any trace of this in our sample.
When you say the galactic bulge, just to clarify for our listeners, that's sort of the centre of the galaxy.
It's towards the centre of the galaxy.
Yeah. So which instruments did you use to look at the galactic bulge and pick out these planetary nebulae?
We used the New Technology Telescope, which is run by ESO in Chile,
okay,
and also images from the Hubble Space Telescope.
Right, okay. So this was optical then?
It was all optical. Optical. And it was in the... We basically used images using the hydrogen alpha filter.
Is that because that's what's most sensitive to planetary nebulae? Or?
It gives some of the brightest images, basically.
And how many of these did you pick? Of these objects did you count or did you pick up?
Well, we had over 130. We were able to measure angles on 130 of them. And we'd split them up into different categories.
Why did you choose to look towards the galactic bulge? Is it because there are more there, or is their distribution rather uniform across the galaxy?
We were looking at the galactic bulge because we were basically investigating nebulae, planetary nebulae, in the galactic bulge for other reasons. Basically, it wasn't to do this particular paper. So basically, we were making measurements on those nebulae, and we thought we would check out the results shown by Weidman and Dyers.
So just to clarify, when you say when you talk about the angle of these things, what exactly do you mean?
What you can do, you've got an elongated nebula.
Okay.
So you can measure it, the angle it produces from north to east on the sky. It's all two-dimensional.
Right.
You only see a two-dimensional projection.
Of course, yeah.
These were then converted to galactic coordinates, and we then used those angles to measure to see whether the... Basically, these were inclined from north towards the plane, the galactic plane.
So why are they elongated in one particular direction?
Well, basically, you would argue that nebulae should be spherical, but in reality, this doesn't seem to be the case.
Okay.
And you get various forms. And the basic one, the most spectacular, of course, are the bipolars and butterfly nebulae and variations thereon. Changes could be due to dust disks, magnetic fields are suggested, and binary stars is another one that suggested for causing variation.
tell us a bit more about the main result of your paper. I mean, you found something a little bit special about all these planetary nebulae in the bulge.
When we looked at the overall sample, we got no result. It all seemed to be random. When we actually took the bipolar nebulae
right.
that we had as a sample, we found that there was a significant result in a deviation from randomness, and that mm-hmm. with a mean angle approximately along the galactic plane.
These bipolar nebulae all seem to be aligned in one direction. Is that along?
They weren't all aligned in that direction,
okay.
but there were many of them that were. The,
right.
the distribution wasn't random.
Okay, so there was some sort of pattern there that was
yes.
going on. Could you delve into bipolar nebulae a bit more, since these seem to be the sort of the interesting ones? What distinguishes them from, I don't know, your garden variety planetary nebula?
Well, the most obvious thing is their shape. But there are a couple of theories about how they're formed. They basically involve restrictions by a large dust disk around the star.
Okay.
Or due to magnetic fields caused by the star itself, which is mm-hmm. doubted because of the strength of the soup, any field would be very small. Or
okay.
caused by a dynamo effect from a binary partner.
Right, okay. So these bipolar planetary nebulae, we will post a few images up on the website, but they basically look like, so you've got a star with almost two jets coming out of it, I suppose you could call them.
Think of an hourglass and variations on that. And some of them are rather more complicated, and there are all sorts of details in the outflows, but that's the basic shape.
And so coming back to this pattern that you observed, do you have any idea what could be behind that?
Well, we postulated that it may be because of the bipolar nebula being formed out of a binary system, and that the binary system itself was aligned due to strong magnetic fields in the bulge, in the early years of the bulge.
Right.
And because the material, the inflowing material from the cloud of dust and gas
mm-hmm.
is restricted in falling across the magnetic field lines,
right,
but not along them, that would produce a disk that's perpendicular to the field lines. The stars would form in the disk, so
right.
they would be rotating, as it were,
all sort of
around
in
the field lines, if you
yeah.
see what I mean.
Yeah.
Although the stars have moved away, then there's
they
nothing
still
to actually change that alignment.
Sure.
As they move away as a binary pair through the belt.
Interesting, yeah, because, I mean, all these planetary nebulae are completely in isolation. They're completely distinct from one another. So it was curious, I suppose, to see a pattern emerge there in the first place.
We were not expecting to see anything.
That's kind of the way science works. You sort of see stuff where you're not expecting to find it, and something really interesting crops up. What future observations could be made to maybe... Would you expect there to be further patterns, maybe in larger samples of planetary nebulae, for example?
I would hope somebody will actually take a larger sample, possibly in the infrared, because there are parts of the bulge that are obscured, so we couldn't see nebulae in there.
Right.
So a larger sample would be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Infrared would be useful. You have to make sure, of course, that you haven't got a foreground nebulae. Basically, that can be helped with radio observations of these nebulae as well, to make sure they're not in the foreground,
okay.
or even behind the bulge, for that matter. So there are always restrictions. So a good, strong, and high resolution... Well, we had a high-resolution sample, but
mm-hmm.
any bigger sample would also have to be high-resolution.
Sure, yeah, of course. Presumably, with a bigger sample, if understood correctly, would maybe be able to tell us a bit more about the early conditions that were happening in the bulge, in terms of maybe the magnetic field that was going on there and that sort of thing?
Well, the first thing about a bigger sample, of course, it would make the result more robust, or it could, of course. There's always the possibility it would refute the...
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's true.
A larger sample would help in that respect. It would also cover the area, if it was in the infrared, it would cover the areas that we haven't looked at.
Yeah.
And we could see if the pattern was even more interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. Great. Well, that was really fascinating. I know a lot more about planetary nebulae now. So thank you very much, Dr. Primaries, for being with us today.
You're welcome.